And at one point in time, they changed their policies, as far as I understand, and they gave you a 30-day notice to basically leave their premises. Yeah. More or less, that's what they did, right?
Yes, exactly. So we worked with them for, I think, 4 years. And then out of the blue, they suddenly dropped a sudden email in the middle of the night. It was a nice thing to wake up to.
Hi, I'm Andreas, the founder and CEO of Made With Love. We help startups and their teams grow. Today, I'm talking with Arnoud van der Meulenbroeke, the founder of Phisht, in Pulse, our monthly podcast. We will be discussing his transition from being a single founder, taking care of everything, to CTO, and the tricky situation they got into when their main vendor decided to shut their service off on a 30-day notice. Sit back, relax, and enjoy. Today I'm talking with Arnoud from Aalst, Belgium, currently living in my hometown Leuven. He founded Phisht in 2018 on his own, being the CEO, CTO, and basically the jack of all trades. Welcome to the podcast, Arnoud.
Hi, Andreas. Thank you.
Maybe you can start with explaining what Phisht is about. Obviously, I know it. You're one of our customers, but it's always great to hear it firsthand from the founder.
Sure. So, well, Phisht is a European market leader on the face of cybersecurity and more specifically cyber awareness. So what we're trying to do is basically train companies and more specifically their employees to become more cyber aware. And we do that by, well, sending them out real phishing simulations, so phishing emails, but in a safe environment, and training them via our Phisht Academy and having several other things like our Let's Secure This Now, our threats to all, well, with one single goal of training those recipients to become more cyber-aware.
That's a very nice thing to do. I'm big in cybersecurity as well. Never trust me when I give you an iPhone cable because it's a keylogger, for example. Okay, one of the things that I think is really interesting about you and Phisht is the fact that you started a company. I mean, you're the developer that created the first version of it, and you were also the CEO, I think even the sales at one point in time. And after a couple of years, I think about a year ago or something, you transitioned into the role of a CTO instead of being the CEO and jack of all trades. What made you make that decision and how did it turn out for you?
Well, when I started Phisht a couple of years ago, it was indeed, well, when you start something on your own, the first thing that you have to do is basically everything. You have to build your company, you have to do it because otherwise you won't survive. I think you know what it's like. So when I first started out, it was just developing to create a product. It was basically like a small side project or a hobby that grew into a business by accident. And well, once it started growing and once I got the investment from Jo van den Berg, well, basically, it suddenly wasn't a project anymore. It was a real business that needed real input, needed real, well, all sorts of things, actually. Suddenly, I really had to grow myself as a person, and I did so. I did the sales, as you mentioned. I'd helped in the marketing. I did help in the office, the HR, the recruiting, in everything, basically. And while obviously I did so, and it helped Phisht grow tremendously over those couple of years, it wasn't my strong suit or my what I like to do at all. And, well, after a sudden while, I just had to come to that fact and I had to accept that it wasn't worth it. It wasn't healthy to be working those long hours during a day, and it wasn't going to be constructive. Mm-hmm. And especially it wasn't helping the business as much as it should. And that was one of the main reasons why I eventually decided, like, okay, I can't do this anymore. I need some help. And then I went to Jo, so he's my business partner. And we basically decided upon, well, we didn't decide upon, I forced his hand, basically, by forcing him to become the CEO. Mm-hmm. He wasn't so appreciative at first, but over the course of a couple of months, I helped him, well, I helped convince him, I would rather say, to become CEO. And, well, he then did, and everything, it was a rocky ride, obviously, because there were a lot of changes. We had an older technology stack then, with C# that we also had to replace. There were new things that we had to introduce over the last year. But all in all, if you look back on it now, a year and a half later, it's been the best ride possible. And
do you feel relieved as well?
Yeah, definitely.
I guess it's a more easy, more comfortable position to be in.
Yeah.
I mean, myself as well. I've been a developer myself, and of course I'm still a CEO, but getting your hands dirty on code is always nice, and I know you're also like that. So some people, they don't care about code anymore at all after a while, but I think we're the same in that we really like to program and and make things, actually.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah.
Cool. I mean, obviously, we have been working with you guys for a while, and a couple of months ago, there was a situation, and that's actually why I wanted to record this interview, because I think it's something very interesting. Obviously, when you're doing phishing simulations, you're sending out a bunch of email on a daily basis. I don't know, can you share, like, how many emails are you sending out per day? Do you have an idea on that?
Per day is a difficult estimation, but on a yearly basis, we send millions of them all around the globe. So it's indeed a quite tricky situation.
Yeah, and so you were working with a well-known provider, I'm not going to name them. And at one point in time, they changed their policies, as far as I understand, and they gave you a 30-day notice to basically leave their premises. More or less, that's what they did, right?
Yes, exactly. So we worked with them for, I think, 4 years. And then out of the blue, they suddenly dropped a sudden email in the middle of the night. It was a nice thing to wake up to.
And I guess if you were a good customer, you had like an account manager and stuff like that, I guess, with them. So it's not that you were just a random number in their database.
No, we spent thousands and thousands of euros with them per month. So we knew them, but suddenly that wasn't worth anything anymore, unfortunately.
And so yeah, what's the first thing, like when you need to wake up in the morning and you see that email, like what's the first thing that goes through your head?
Well, the first thing was like, really, am I still dreaming, to be honest? Well, because it was that surreal, especially since they just gave us 1 month to basically get off of their platform when they would shut it down. And well, then it was all hands on deck. I convened like a special meeting with all of our stakeholders to describe the situation, to say where we're at, what was going on, and well, what was possible. And then also on that same day, we obviously involved the development team as well and started scratching a plan together on how we could...
Did you try to have a conversation with them, like to see if there was any possibility of still staying on their platform? Like what was the reasoning that they gave you? Was it like really like a legal thing, or was it...
Yeah, so indeed, we definitely did. So that was another route that we were trying to do while we were developing the technical side of things, is the entire legal aspect behind it, because they basically barely gave us a reason why it happened. They told us that their providers complained that we were sending out phishing simulations and that it was causing harm to their reputation, which I sort of can understand, but also we've been doing that for years and years on end, and we always require our clients to do a certain whitelisting to make sure that our emails arrive. So it's, I don't think it's the real reason. We unofficially, we know that a couple of our competitors and one of our major competitors is still with them, so their explanation is really not valid at all. So yes, we still to this day are still having a legal conversation with them.
Oh, really? Okay. Because I think it's important. I mean, obviously, when you're sending out emails, you could think it's just like, okay, it's just an SMTP service that you're using. Switching it out is pretty easy. But you guys were really baked very deep into their way of working, right? So it was not that you could just change to another SMTP service and it was done. So from a technical perspective, but we can dive into that a bit later, it was a hard thing to do. And so you wake up that morning, you gather like the task force. How did you approach this from like the business perspective? Of course, there was the legal, and you try to convince them, first of all, to keep serving you. Second, I guess you try to make the notice period longer. But they were very firm on that, right? They were not giving any...
Yeah, they were not budging at all.
Yeah, interesting. And so then probably you start checking your options. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you approach that? Like... how did you compare or which what kind of providers actually did you keep in mind? Because obviously when one of the big, basically infrastructure as a service email providers kicks you out, you can consider others also not very welcoming to your services, right?
Yeah, exactly. So that was one of the main issues that we had. We already, because we sort of did have a disaster recovery plan for our emails, but it wasn't in such short notice and not on that scale. So the first thing that we did is, well, looked at the list of providers that we had. We built it up even further. And then we well, we made someone within our team, Dimitri, actually perform like an entire analysis of all of those different providers. And then we decided upon on that day who we were going to set up meetings with. And in that meeting, we were just very transparent and very honest about what happened, because it's not something that we should be ashamed for. We didn't receive any warnings, we didn't receive nothing, and we just had to act upon it. Some providers told us, as you mentioned, well, that use case is not for us. But other providers told us, oh, no worries, we've done that multiple times, and we can settle it in our legal agreements as well, if you wish. And so we did, and that's also how we found our current mail provider.
So in the current contract with your vendor, you have like really a clause that really explicitly mentions that you can do this. Okay, that makes a ton of sense.
So our use case, because we're not going to experience that issue again. And as well, the notice period from their side on has been significantly increased for obvious reasons.
Yeah, of course. Okay, and then on the technical side, I mean, of course, Dimitri is someone from my team that's working at Fisht, a couple of our engineers as well. So at one point in time, so you decide, okay, we will have to switch providers. And then indeed, like on the first day, you already involved the development team. So they start making a plan on switching over. Can you explain a bit like how that went and like what kind of road bumps you had there? Of course, because switching over email, I mean, if you're a small company, it's easy. But if you're a big company, I guess you had like IP whitelisting and you had to warm up IPs and stuff like that. Can you maybe elaborate a bit on that?
Yeah, so that's one side that we actually split up from one another. We had a fully technical implementation within our own platform, because that was, let's just call it just code, basically, that we had to change, and where we had to change the the code to match the new provider. We do have our platform is several different microservices, basically. So we had to switch it out in a couple of places. So that was one thing. But besides that, we also had reused from the other provider, the original one. We used a lot of their built-in functionality, such as their templating feature. We used their inbound parsing functionality, so emails coming into us as well. So there were a lot of different things. So we had one side of the team, and actually most of the team, focus on that part, while we, at the other end, also built out a fallback scenario where we basically started working out, how do we want to do the IP warm-up? How do we communicate to our clients about the technical whitelisting that they have to do? How do we have to do all of that? And so we basically split it up from one another, because they were so different and they were both essential to success. And that's basically how we did it.
And did it work out in the end?
Well, yes. So we only had, I think, like 2 weeks to actually warm up our IPs, because we were only given a month. So we started off with a couple of percentages of our emails being sent through it. And then we gradually increased until, like, I think 24 hours before the deadline, we only were at 100%. So it was a very stressful situation, as you can imagine. But we also combined that with a lot of communication to our clients. Every time that somebody signed into our platform, they had to, accept, or until they accepted at least, they had to view like what we were doing, what happened, and what they needed to change. And they had to click on accept before they could do anything at all. And then you could also just track that really objectively, like to see how many clients have changed that, how many clients do still need to change it. And besides a couple of minor issues here and there, most of the clients didn't even notice that we had to change something. So that's really the ideal situation.
Actually, we wrote a blog post on our website on madewithlove.com/blog on the switching of the mail providers, how we did that technically, like the gradual rollout of it. So if someone's interested, they can go and check it there. One of the things that I, because I've been involved a bit with Dimitri on the backend side, like on how we could resolve this as soon as possible. Have you considered building your own sending infrastructure, like using your own, for example, Power MTA or something? Because you might be fed up with infrastructure as a service providers. Did you consider doing that?
Yeah, definitely. So that was actually one of the scenarios that we also had in our heads. One thing that we currently well, are planning to set up is still that own setup.
Okay.
Because we want a fail-safe for whenever our new mail provider, let's say that in a couple of years' time, they also change their minds. They also say, oh, you can basically leave. So we spoke to the major ones, so indeed a Power MTA, a Green Arrow, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And we have our license now, but we still need to set it up. But definitely, that's one of the things that we have taken into account.
Isn't the problem then going to be that, because you're only sending out phishing simulation emails, that the risk of an IP being blacklisted is a lot higher than if you're sending it through an infrastructure as a service provider? Or are you using dedicated IPs anyway?
Yeah, we're using dedicated IPs anyway.
Okay.
So, and also we split that up because we also have a whole lot of transactional emails for our Phished Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, nearly half of our emails are transactional ones.
Okay.
So we basically split those up between two parts. And that was also one thing that made our IP warm up much easier. And we do have to give a major shout out to our new provider. They also allowed us to send a part of our emails on their shared IPs at first, to be able to make that switch smoothly.
I think we can name them, eh?
Yeah, it's Mailgun. So yeah. Big shout out to those guys.
Very nice. Okay. Cool. Thanks, Arnold, for sharing the story. I think it's very interesting. And I hope that not a lot of companies are having to go through such a situation, but I think it can happen. I mean, now in this case, you were forced out of their platform for kind of legal or terms reasons. But the same thing could happen if a supplier goes out of business, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's a good lesson, and I think it's a nice story to share as well on how you approached it and how you guys overcome it. And happy to hear that it worked out. So thanks a lot for sharing this. And I would say have a good rest of your day.
Thank you, Andreas. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's it. Thanks for listening, and see you next time. Don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn or subscribe to our newsletter on our website.